This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And I want to wish each and every one of you listeners a very happy and prosperous new year. I hope that you had an opportunity to ring in the new year right, and that this year is going to be a great one for you, and that you make some good plans and follow through, and everything that you wish for comes true. So go out and make it as you will. This week, we're going to be talking with another person who I chatted with when I was in Havana, Cuba for Magic Cuba back in November, and this one features Joe Crisillo. And Joe was an attorney with a successful law practice who decided a few years ago to make the switch over to being a full-time professional mentalist. He was successful before in doing that on a part-time basis, but decided, as I did as well, of going from the corporate business world into the entertainment world to be a professional, and has made that transition quite not necessarily effortlessly, but it actually has taken a lot of work. And we talk a lot about that in this podcast. So for those of you who might be interested perhaps in having a full-time job and wanting to perhaps take it into being a full-time professional, or that you want to increase your business as a part-time professional, I think you'll find this episode particularly enlightening. There are a lot of fun stories that he shares with us and things he talks about. For an example, having Uri Geller as a client one time when he was working as an attorney. Anyhow, a lot of really cool things I think that you'll enjoy. So I want to thank you guys very much for listening during this past year and during this coming year. It's going to be really great. One of the first conventions I'm planning on attending here soon will be Magi Fest, and I know that's going to be well attended. In fact, Josh Jay said that I think they have like an additional 150 people over what they have had last year, or any time, I guess, in the past, and they have been sold out since November. So I know that's going to be just an awesome convention, and I know with all those people, I'm probably going to run into many of you listeners. And if you happen to see me walking around with my microphone, please stop by and say hello, and I appreciate you listening, and we will talk with you over in Columbus, Ohio, just in a few weeks. But for now, let me introduce my guest this week, Mr. Joe Crisillo, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And today we are recording this while in Havana, Cuba. We were part of Magic Cuba, which you may have heard earlier this year in the podcast, or perhaps last year, depending upon when this is going to be released. But it was in November of 2018. And so I'm sitting on the veranda at the Nacional Hotel in Havana and speaking with a good friend and someone who is a speaker, as well as perhaps better known as a mentalist, but also an attorney, was an attorney. Okay. Had his own law firm, and author of several books, both on law, and he also was a professor at the university and teaching courtroom law, I guess. And please welcome, it used to be Joey the Sea, Joe Crisillo. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
You don't mind, still call you Joey from time to
time. No. People still call me Joey. It's the corporate world. I like the mind shark because they can't spell Crisillo. So,
Well, that was what I thought about Joey the Sea. Also, you know, when I first had heard that, and we met, and I had heard Joey the Sea being referred to, for some reason I was thinking it was going to like a seer, you know, like a psychic or a fortune teller. Have you gotten confused like that when you had that?
Yeah, and that was the. That was the whole premise and the intent, if
that you
will.
That you could see into the future, okay, as a mental... Ah,
yes,
now I get
see,
it.
There you go, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
See, I thought that then later they said, no, he's kind of like a mafia kind of, you know, the kind of character that Danny Archer has as, what's that, Joey
Mazzarella? Gino Mazzarella, yes, yeah. Yes.
So, but you were like the mentalist to the mob.
Yes, that was
That was the
yes.
idea, okay.
Yeah.
How long did you have that?
I did that act for about 10 years and stopped doing it somewhere around 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then started doing just the what I call straight mentalism.
Straight mentalism.
Straight mentalism, yes. There you go.
And then going by Joe Crisillo.
Yes.
Just a mind chart.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
again, people saying, do you have, speaking of that, a recorded announcement when people, when you come up to do a show, as opposed to handing them something to read so this way that they don't mess up your name?
Yeah, I have two things. One is I have a pre-recorded announcement
that
was my introductions recorded over music, which is my walk-on music. So if they choose not to introduce me, I can use that. But I also have a written introduction where my name is spelled out meticulously, phonetically, so they don't say it wrong.
That is good. But you don't have... Okay, gotcha. That would be the best way of doing that. You know, I have a recorded message. I thought, how could people mess up Scott Wells? But they have. Yeah. A friend of mine named Bob Smith, same thing with him, that he's had issues in which they've not been able to pronounce. They pronounce it okay, but they forget the name by the time that they kind of go through the rest of whatever they're saying. And our magician, you know, here it is. And that's why the Banachek changed his name from Steve Shaw. I think it was easy enough.
Well, and actually a funny story behind the introduction. I used to use the recorded, but then I had a Supreme Court of the United States appearance. And my biggest fear was not what I had to say to the court, but it was that Chief Justice Roberts would say my name wrong. So I had a business card printed with my name phonetically written on it, just so he would call me and say the right name in the Supreme Court. And then I decided to start using that as my introduction.
That's funny. That's good. Well, having your name read by the Supreme Court, I think it would be kind of cool. Now, I know that you are a trial lawyer, but have you ever been to the Supreme Court and actually tried anything at the Supreme Court?
No, you don't actually try cases before the Supreme
Court. You don't.
The Supreme Court is argument court only, so that means you're arguing issues of constitutional law to have your case decided on the legal basis rather than a factual trial.
So, you've been to the Supreme Court, and as I understand it, you don't try the Supreme Court, but you appear at the Supreme
Court. Appear, and it's a legal argument in front of the court.
Okay.
And you argue your side, the other side argues their side, and the judges make a decision. The justices, sorry.
They're basically the jury. Judge and jury, in a way.
Only as to law, not as to the facts of the case.
Okay.
So what happened is already decided. How the law applies is what they look at.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But they determine what cases they want to hear.
Absolutely, and they can throw them out before they even get there.
Yeah, I'm sure they get tons of and people trying to, and that's the ultimate court of appeal, as they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How'd yours go?
Everything went well. Let's put it
that
way.
That's good. That's good. Everybody was happy with it.
Yeah.
Decision. So, again, that you were doing mentalism more than magic from the beginning, or did you kind of switch over to mentalism?
No, I was a magician. Probably from the time I was 18 to the time I was...
Manipulation coins?
Comedies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Shtick.
Mm-hmm.
Children's birthday parties.
Because you like being on stage.
Parties. Yes.
Yeah.
I was also the in-house entertainer for Hershey Park for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And I burned out doing magic in about 93, 94.
Mm-hmm.
Quit working. And then some friends encouraged me to try mentalism. And I found my new passion and started doing that.
Interesting. And what was one of the influential books to you? I mean, would that have been 13 Steps?
Well,
Corinda's?
Yeah, Corinda was always one of my favorites. But I have to admit the two that shifted me and made me really want to explore more were Bob Cassidy's The Art of Mentalism and the Koran books.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those are classics.
Yeah, they were what drug me in.
So if you're recommending books to mentalists, those would be the ones to kind of
digest. And Corinda, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
Hahnemann came later for me, which is weird, but yeah.
it's kind of funny that mentalism is something that magicians tend to migrate towards after they've been in magic for a while. I don't know of anybody I've ever spoken to is actually from the get-go, unless you're from Israel, I guess.
Right.
And the reason is who you're influenced by. And there are
absolutely
a lot of other mentalists, particularly in Israel, and so they've seen Uri Geller, and they said, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't think Banachek really got into it. Matter of fact, I know he didn't. He wasn't a magician. He was influenced by Uri Geller, and then he started doing that, and then we were working with Randy, and it was always a mentalist. But I think that those people who start out with an intent of being a mentalist are just a handful, far and few apart.
Absolutely. No, and for me, it was actually funny because the transition came when I was, went to see Mark Salem on Broadway.
Yep.
And
I've heard that show was fantastic.
It was. It was phenomenal.
Is he still working on touring at all?
He's touring. He's still working. He's doing as many shows as he can.
For the public or mostly private?
No, he's doing public and private events.
Because I thought he was doing theater shows.
I don't know. I don't know what his theater run schedule is.
Mm-hmm. But he's one of your good buddies.
Coming,
just kind of lives up the road.
Very close friend, and great mentor and buddy. And so knowing him was once he got a hold of me, I started learning mentalism, and then, of course, the more I kept going, the more I knew, and then I think my fate was sealed somewhere in the mid-2000s when I became Uri Geller's lawyer. And Uri then drug me in.
You so became his lawyer.
I did legal work for Uri in the States.
He approached you, or how'd that come about?
Actually, it's a funny story.
That's why I'm here.
Yes. it was a Sunday. I had just returned home from breakfast, and my cell phone rang with a rather long number on it that I didn't recognize, being European number.
Right.
And I answered the call, and the person on the other end said, Joseph, this is Uri Geller. And I basically did what you would expect and said, who is this really?
Yeah.
And he said, it's Uri. And I said, Uri who? And he goes, Geller. And I go, no, who is this really? And he said, I'm in a car driving to Belgium.
Yeah.
It's me.
Uh-huh.
And I realized his voice. At that moment I went, oh, my God, it is him.
Yeah.
And he gave me the whole backstory of what he needed, had me reach out to another one of his U.S. lawyers who became now a very good friend.
Uh-huh.
And the two of us took the case on for him.
Did he know that you were a mentalist? Was he recommended?
Well, how he got to me is another great story.
Yeah.
He was working at the time on the next Uri Geller shows in Europe.
Kind of like a phenomenon show.
Phenomenon, yes. Okay, yeah. They called it the next Uri Geller.
Yeah.
And
which was a quote reality show.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And Joe Atmore,
who's
the Dunninger expert.
Yeah.
Joe was working with Uri, and the story goes that Uri asked Joe, can you refer somebody to me on the East Coast? And Joe said, well, yeah, I have a friend of mine, Joe Grisullo. I think you'll like him. And Uri said, I don't know anything about him. And the next morning, Uri called a buddy of his, who's a criminal lawyer out of New York named Bob Fogelnest. He calls Bobby and says, Bob, I need a lawyer on the East Coast. Can you recommend somebody? And Bob Fogelnest said, yeah, my buddy Joe Grisullo. He's one of yours. And Uri said, that's the second time I've heard that man's name in 12 hours. And he called me immediately.
He must be the guy.
It was pure circumstance or psychic connection.
Or was
that's
it?
What he believed. So, but.
Well, I'm sure the details of the case are not things that you can talk about.
No, I won't.
I understand.
Yeah.
But did you maintain a relationship and a friendship with him?
I actually talked to him yesterday.
Oh, so, did you really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So how's he doing?
I was actually not talking to him. I was using WhatsApp. He's doing wonderful.
Yeah. WhatsApp's free. You can do kind of anywhere, even here in Cuba.
Right.
Yeah.
No, he's doing wonderful. He's living now in Old Jaffa in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
His son, Daniel, is who we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
Daniel's an attorney. Had practice in California, then New York, and now he's a prosecutor to the Crown in England.
Wow.
And he and I were discussing Daniel's ascension to become a chief prosecutor someday. So
I wonder if he used his father's credentials as far as who he was. You never know.
Let me say this. I know Daniel Geller.
Okay.
Daniel's a good lawyer.
Yeah.
He doesn't need his father. Yeah.
Stand alone.
Very good man. Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard Uri speak at FISM in was it Italy? I guess it was in Italy, I think. And he was a main speaker, and such charisma. I know that was the first thing I got out of this, was that he was just phenomenal in listening to the stories, because I've just heard the one side, James Randi's side of the story, basically.
Right.
And then for him to talk about how that he had come to or rose to fame within the community by what that he was doing. And I think that one thing was where that he would have his photos taken with other celebrities so that eventually people began to say, who is that guy? And then finally say, oh, there's Uri. And then finally it's like, where is Uri?
Kind of a thing.
And I thought that was a good idea. Some people will shy away from, taking some photos of celebrities because they don't want to. But his was just the opposite. He wants to jump into every photo, particularly early on to get brand awareness,
The word that he and I have discussed with his promotion is shameless.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is the best at it.
He's
taught me very well how to be shameless. Yes.
if you want some notoriety, you need to take some lessons from Uri Geller.
And he's incredibly likable. You can't help but love him.
Well, that was what it came off the stage. I mean, he was speaking to a couple thousand of us there at FISM. And he broke that fourth wall immediately just by his humbleness, his genuineness and willingness to answer questions, and just his soft voice and demeanor.
I have always held to the belief that Uri was the best spoonbender alive because his misdirection was his heart.
Ooh, that
you
is
You fell
good.
In love with him, and yes. you didn't care what he did.
You'd believe whatever yes. that he was yeah. feeding you, spoon-feeding you.
Yeah, yeah. And I say that, I mean, yeah, I'm biased. He's a good yeah. friend, but, yeah. you know, just yeah. that's what he is.
Wow.
Lovable.
That's interesting. As an attorney, I know you had a lot of stories. Is there anything in which you've actually used magic to demonstrate in the courtroom?
No, actually, no. Okay. And I say that because a friend of mine out of Philadelphia yeah. has used magic in the courtroom, and he and I are part of a three-person team mm-hmm. that do a course for Pennsylvania lawyers called Law and Magic
yeah.
and how to use the skills of a magician in a courtroom. I deal more with the jury selection and observation side,
yeah.
and he deals with the actual use of magic in the courtroom, and he actually made headlines for it.
Really?
But I have never done it. What he made headlines for was that he had developed a reputation. Steve Leventhal is his name.
Okay.
Steve had developed a reputation for using magic in the courtroom, and a lawyer filed a motion against him to prevent him from using magic in the courtroom, and he replied with a motion to make opposing counsel's motion disappear. And that's how he captioned it, and it went viral.
Yeah.
I do not use it in the courtroom. I try to keep that away from it, but
right.
obviously the observation skills are jury selection and picking juries, and that's
very important.
What I've done for years.
Yeah, I want to get into that in just a moment. There was a friend of mine's attorney out in California, and he had made news out there then as well. And it seems like he was doing a rope, I want to say, like Professor's Nightmare or something,
right.
you know. And the courtroom is not someplace you would typically expect to see a show. And he wasn't doing a show. Obviously, you're using that because it has to be relevant. They can't
right.
waste the court's time. And so, but he was doing this so that it did make sense in the context of his defense of his client, and he had won the case. So I knew that it was used from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
that's interesting.
Yeah, I never used it, and I'll just say it because for me, I wanted my relationship with the jury to have nothing between us.
I see.
Didn't want to have anything they questioned or put ahead of me, so it had to be me and them.
And you taught... in college, you taught the class about juries or selection, or what was it?
I taught law school class.
Yeah.
And the course, I forget the exact title of the course, but the subtitle was Storytelling as Warfare.
Okay.
And what we discussed was everything about stage persona,
uh-huh.
how to tell a story and how to structure it so that you can get what you want at the end from the people you're telling it to.
Okay.
And
now that could apply, obviously, more outside of just the courtroom as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any kind of quick tips you can provide?
Just a plug, if I can. That's actually what led to the original book, Performance on Trial, that
yes.
I wrote for the Magic
Which
World.
Which was an excellent book.
Thank you. That came out of print, and now the new edition is called What's Your Freaking Point?
Is and this an expansion of that?
It is an expansion of it for the corporate market.
Okay.
It gotcha. Teaches corporate executives how to be better. So... my best tip that I can give people on that, on the art of storytelling,
yeah.
Is the premise of the book, which is make sure they understand where the story's going,
mm-hmm.
make sure you tell them why they're going there, address their concerns as to why they don't want to go there, and then bring them back around and sum up why they have to go there. So if you can just remember those sentences, you don't need to read my book. That's it.
Got it. That's the main outline of the book, and then you kind of flesh it in with a bunch of words.
Yes. Yes, that's it. That's it.
And sell 10,000 copies. Yeah. More than that. You've sold
worldwide. What's Your Freaking Point is the newer one.
Okay.
The first book, Getting to Us, uh-huh. which is a corporate management book,
yeah,
that hit bestseller. And mm-hmm. My record was 10,000 copies in one day.
In one day.
So, yeah, that was kind of the highest I hit in one day.
Wow. That is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think it's what they tell you in the military or someplace, was saying that you tell them, and then you tell them what you said, and then you tell them again,
yes.
like three different times, basically, to make sure that. But I like that, and also it's this way that they have no way out. And I think that's a lot what magicians and mentalists do, where that you're leading them down the garden path, basically, with no other road to take except the one where you're leading.
Absolutely, and if you do it correctly,
yeah.
they make all the assumptions you want them to make.
Yeah,
and they make the decision on their own, and you don't have
right.
to tell them.
Right.
So, same with storytelling.
It completes the sentence. It completes the thought within their individual minds without you having to say, whatever. It was like a car just laid down. You know, Alex Pandera, I had spoken with him a while back, and he had a good philosophy, and that is of having a card selected and signed, and he does a bunch of stuff, and then when he lays down the card, then he says, you know, this is the last thing I'm doing. And if we turn that over, you know, everything else I've done, you know, has been perfect. And so mm-hmm. but if you turn that over, then you know that I'm correct. However, there is still mystery. Is that the right card or not? You can put that in your purse, and you can explain this story to people tomorrow, next year, you know, as long as you want to keep this, and say, and I've kept this, and I've never turned it over. You know, I've kept it, you know. Right. And then the mystery lasts longer. I hadn't thought of it before like that, but that's...
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've always... And one of my examples I've used when I wrote Performance on Trial
yeah.
was, if you believe you're taking the coin, the mm-hmm. audience believes you're taking
conviction
the coin,
is the word there,
and then mm-hmm. the French drop works.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to believe it first. If it's a trick to you, it's a trick to them.
Which is why, when I was first learning all of that, that you would practice that, doing the real move, so you know what it felt like. So even though that when you would do the French drop the next time, that there was nothing in your hand, but in your mind, you still felt the coolness of the coin, you know, the weight of the coin.
Right.
And it was really there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
What do you think is the hardest thing about mentalism?
You know, the hardest thing about mentalism is, at least for me, is keeping it what I call conversational.
Okay.
So it's
not like you're talking at the audience.
Right. I need to be talking with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm talking with them and it's part of a natural dialogue,
right,
then I can move through it much smoother.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the problems that I've always had is with my corporate audiences, I don't want to look like it's a show. I want to make my talk a conversation.
Right.
And my show has to have the same context, because then I keep them with me and they follow everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, at the end, I'd rather they know more about me and more about themselves than they remember what I did.
Right.
And that's where I'm going. So I need them to experience it with me, not watch me.
Yeah. I've always thought that it was difficult. And one of the reasons maybe perhaps magicians did not pursue mentalism is because you had to follow a script, at least in your mind, if you didn't have one that was written out.
Right.
And it's like there's between a magician and a prop comic. I'm sorry, a comic and a prop comic, where a prop comic depends upon the props for the laughs. A stand-up comic depends upon the microphone, and it's just naked in front of the audience, basically.
Yeah.
A mentalist is very much like that as well, in which you may have a drawing pad or, you know, minimal props, basically, obviously,
right.
As opposed to bringing in furniture of some sort.
Yes.
And so it's easier, I think, and more fun for us to buy all the cool little props and things and everything. I like what Penn was saying about, you know, look at the pretty thing. You know, look at the pretty box. You know, the attention's really more, the box did the trick, not you, you know.
Yes.
It's kind of like all the apps that are out there right now. The problem with a lot of those, you know, when I've seen people do that for an audience, they'll scream, they'll say, wow, where did you get that app? It's not like you did it, the app
right.
did it, you know. So mentalism is difficult, I think, of trying to get people to buy into your personality, and some people may not have a personality, you know. They buy their personality with their tricks.
Well, and unfortunately, I will say this, as a corporate speaker and being on that circuit,
mm-hmm.
the number one value that you bring to the table is authenticity
mm-hmm.
and speaking truth. The mm-hmm. minute you introduce a prop,
your value is diminished.
Your value diminishes yeah. because you're not authentic. Something else is now important, which is why I kept it out of the courtroom.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't want the attention.
But it works for your partner.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But my personality doesn't
Correct.
Lend to
Correct.
That.
Correct.
When I'm speaking to a corporate audience, I want them to stay focused on what's in their heads and what I'm saying to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them watching a box.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. you know, as I always say, I don't want them watching the box unless I want them to watch the box.
Right.
Yeah, I want to have that control. So that's why I try to stay as propless as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that among the things you do that are minimalist, I should say, was a Magic Square. We were kind of talking about this the other night, that it was the story that you tell is really a real story. So
it
I'd
is.
Like to hear it. You said, I'll say this until the podcast, so I'm anxious to hear the story.
And the statute of limitations has run, so I tell the story every show. My routine, and I know you've seen it, and I know some people haven't. My routine is based on a story about a man named Nate, who I worked with during the summer of 1979 and 80, who was a bookie. And it's the story of how I learned Nate was running numbers and his system for running numbers. And that's what leads up to the presentation of the Magic Square.
Okay.
The story I said to you that I love telling and I held off till now, and I didn't do it the other night because the time conditions were tight. But my greatest moment was, and let's say, I'll be cautious and not implicate myself. I was coming up out of the Philadelphia subway, having just met a man, and I came up to the top of the steps, and I ran into an elderly gentleman and bumped into him. I said, excuse me. He said, excuse me. And then I noticed a television camera, looked at the man, and realized it was John Scarney. And I said, Mr. Scarney. And he looked at me immediately and said, how do you know me? And I said, I've read your autobiography and everything you've ever written.
Yes.
I'm a magician. And he grabbed me, took me aside, and on Channel 3 in Philadelphia at the lunch program, did card to wallet with me on the street corner.
Wow.
And that was one of my greatest moments because I loved him.
Wow.
And just so literally running into your hero coming up out of a subway was just so fortuitously beautiful.
Wow. Yeah, the timing couldn't have been better.
Yes. And he also laughed at the end because obviously I signed the card.
Uh-huh.
And after he finished the trick and the cameras went off, I handed him back the card and said, now it's your turn. You have to sign it. And I still have it.
Still have it?
Yes.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So that's the story I said I had to tell later. But yeah.
You know, I've heard that term a lot, and I apologize for my stupidity on that, but I don't know what running numbers means.
Running numbers. What that meant is when bookies take bets, they obviously people know they take book on sports events,
right.
Running numbers, what that was when they are taking bets based on that day's daily number. They're not legal lottery bets on the daily number.
You mean, no, you say...
Well, you know, you think of the Mega Millions. You go into a store, you buy a ticket.
Sure.
Well, in the old days, you buy a ticket for a dollar.
Okay.
Or you can give your bookie $20 on a number, and if that number came up, your payoff was a lot higher, and...
I see.
The bookies ran the numbers rather than buying a lottery ticket.
Because
you got to remember, we're older now, and back then lotteries weren't as popular.
Correct.
As
so it was basically like a lottery that you could do with your bookie, and there were a lot of other people each day, and they would pick different numbers.
Right.
I guess. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where my Magic Square routine was evolved around the running of numbers.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'd heard that before. Well, that makes sense why I hadn't heard of it, because they don't do that anymore, I guess.
Yeah, it's not as popular as
but
it used to be.
That is where the term the sports book comes from in Las Vegas, and they talk about where's the book? You know, that's where you place your bets.
And that's what bookmakers did on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, hopefully everybody else learned a little thing right there. I did too. So.
Yeah, what you learned from the streets of Philadelphia.
Yes, that's true. Another thing that I wanted to explore was about your transition from going from an attorney, you know, into becoming a magician. You said there was kind of a...
I would say that it was an inevitable shift.
Uh-huh.
But back in the 90s, I was a prosecutor.
Yeah.
And I ended up just becoming best friends with a man named Charlie Tremendous Jones, who was a motivational speaker of incredible caliber. I had no desire to be a speaker, no desire to do any of that.
Right.
He and I met. We became very fast friends. I ended up being his lawyer as well. And over the years, just hung around the business and met some really cool, famous speakers that we would all know the names of, from Dr. Norman Vincent Peale and The Power of Positive Thinking down.
Yeah.
Charlie introduced me to all of them. And... 2008 or 2007, I should say, Charlie was on his deathbed. He died in November of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But Charlie insisted that I join the National Speakers Association because he told me that he wanted me to be a speaker.
Yeah.
So I joined, paid my dues to fulfill the wishes of a dying man, and the seed that he planted over a 10-year period grew and festered until one day I realized maybe he's right.
Yeah.
And then I began to look at transitioning out of my law firm, and also, too, in all fairness, it coincided with last January was my target date.
Yes.
And December of that year, of 2017, is when I wrote the last check for my youngest daughter's college tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized it's go.
Yeah.
It's go time.
Yeah, there are no longer any unending bills. You know,
right.
Kind of,
so
you know,
I decided
get
to
everything all paid off. And,
yep. And reinvention was mine. So that's what I did.
Right.
And
tell me that story on the podcast here that you had said about that you had received a notification that you were accepted.
I always, in my keynote speech, I have to shift gears because I'm in the keynote.
Okay.
I tell my audience that in the summer of 1982 was a very life-changing week for me. In the middle of that summer, because on Monday I got a letter accepting me to Temple University School of Law.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuesday I received a letter telling me I had passed the engineers in training exam for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania so I could go become a licensed engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And on Wednesday I was accepted for a audition for Ringling Brothers Clown College, and Thursday was the longest day in my mother's life. So, and the outcome was I obviously chose the career that provided the most laughs, comedy, and clowns, and I became a lawyer.
That's a great opening. That's a great opening.
And as my mother, who was the eternal critic, saw me give a speech a little while ago,
yeah,
and afterwards said, you know, they didn't all happen in 1 week. I said, but it was one summer, Mom.
Yeah, got to go with it. You know, little artistic license here, please. Yeah, exactly. Journalistic license. You know, there over the years have been various transitions that magicians would make, thinking, I'm enjoying this, but if they're looking for various streams of revenue or one that might be better than what they've
right.
got, they'll go into hypnosis because there are fewer hypnotists out there, so I'll go do this. Or that I'm going to be a mentalist because there are fewer mentalists. Because I remember whenever that I was first trying to sell Joe Stevens on Steve Shaw's Radio Magic, when we had first put that out, it was our first project. And he said, you know, mentalism is not hot. Nobody's going to buy that, you know,
yeah.
kind of a thing. And it wasn't. There were very few. And also with speakers. My point is about people wanting to make a transition into speaking and becoming part of the NSA, the National Speaker Association, that is more difficult than you might think. It's not easy to get in and to do.
No, it's not because it's not easy because...
Although it does pay well at certain levels.
Oh, no, it does, yeah. absolutely.
Yeah.
But the transition becomes your speech and your words are no longer patter. They must be real.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start to go into something that is canned...
Yeah.
And it looks canned.
Right.
And you become unauthentic and not real.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, many people come in and they do speeches and they'll break into a canned patter.
Yeah.
If they really want to succeed and survive in the industry, the magic has to be incidental.
Okay.
It cannot be the focus. Now, my show, it's the focus.
Mm-hmm.
But in my keynote, it's incidental.
Completely. Yeah, you're using... And, well, it's a lot like a trade show from the standpoint
yes.
that you're having to talk about the company's product, service, and whatever else, and the magic is incidental. That's just something that's basically a vehicle to deliver the message.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for me, I don't even know that I can tell you the... Mentalism is a vehicle as much as it's a method of it's a method of delivering the
yes.
message.
Okay.
For instance, one of the things that I do is a psychometry routine where I actually have the audience members write questions for me,
mm-hmm.
and I answer those questions as part of the speech,
mm-hmm.
and then I return each question to the appropriate person and have them sit down.
Okay.
So it just becomes a hit at the end that they all go, holy crap.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with the message. But that holy crap moment literally takes about 6 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And it's just cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't waste their time right. in a trick.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, getting into the speaking, I have recommended to people the first thing is to go to Toastmasters. And I have recommended that so much, not just for those who might be wanting to start to get into the NSA, but more importantly, I think every magician and mentalist should have at least a few months or a year's worth of membership in your local Toastmasters to learn to be more eloquent and how to get rid of the uhs and ahs and you knows and
Absolutely.
That kind of a thing and have actually something you're going to say.
Well, and Toastmasters is great at teaching you how to structure.
That's what I mean.
Commit
yeah.
to the time.
Right.
Know your time limit.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are great at teaching you how to develop your story.
Right. And they're harsh.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, they're
brutal.
Ruthless. I've taught a number of advanced Toastmaster classes.
Have you?
But I myself am not a Toastmaster.
Okay.
I unfortunately learned to speak in court, which was life and death. So I bypassed Toastmaster somewhere along the
somewhere,
way.
Somewhere, yeah.
But no, I think people should do that because one of the things Toastmasters will do is it'll knock the magic out of you.
Hmm.
And if you can learn to give your message without it and then incorporate it back in, it becomes a more powerful message.
I like that. Knock yeah. the magic out of you.
Yeah.
Because then you're focused on really what's important. That is
exactly.
the relationship and communicating with your audience.
Absolutely.
And the communication is two-way.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
though they may not be speaking to you, you can hear or see physically, I guess, that they're relating to what you're
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once you can develop that skill, then you decide what fits in your speech,
mm-hmm.
not what speech fits to your magic.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because something then will come to you because it'll be part of your character, and that's what will develop your individuality that will make you different from everybody, because everybody's different from everybody. We're all individuals, and we shouldn't all try to be like Matt King or be like whomever, you know.
Right.
I think that you could take a little bit of this and a little bit of that guy, and you have different mixes of people, and ultimately somebody said, that looks kind of familiar. Well, it's because this guy's been successful, or this lady has been, you know, whatever. I was talking with somebody last evening and said, well, I have a little bit of Paula Poundstone as far as inspired by her comedy and something mm-hmm. from, you know, this. And so it's not necessarily just from magic either, you know. I mean,
right.
when I mentioned Matt King, it could be from any and every other thing, which I highly recommend as well. Of course, it's to be open to all sorts of media and expose yourself to the world and the news and kind of what's going on and develop your own character.
Absolutely. And I always say I am my own character, but there's hints of Jackie Gleason and John Gotti. So I can't help either
of those,
one
see?
Of those.
Yeah, yeah. I can absolutely see that. So you were saying that the stars kind of aligned and that your long-term goal then was after your last daughter had graduated from college, yeah. you're pretty much done. You know, the same thing with me is that I had all along been doing magic on a part-time basis where I was taking some vacation time or if it was on the weekends when I was at home or whatever, or holidays where I would book some shows that'd be outside of my locale. But I had a long-term goal of saying, you know, once I'm 55, I want to
right.
retire early and go work cruise ships and trade shows, and I did. Almost the next day, you know, when I got started after I had retired, I had said that, well, I'm ready to do this, and I called people. I knew who to call, how to do it, and I had, three trade shows and four cruise ships booked within 2 weeks, you know, because I knew what to do and how to jump into the thing.
Yeah.
So I had, but you can't and shouldn't just jump into it. I always say to pack your parachute because if you jump, then you know that the parachute's packed properly and it will open and
right.
you'll be safe. But don't just think, okay, well, I'm sick of this job or what can I do with my life you know, to make some money. You need to prepare for that. And the preparation means, of course, of being financially stable and for a period of time so that you're able to make it if you have to without anything coming in for some period of time. And also to prepare for emergencies and also have your family buy into it, your spouse in particular.
Oh, absolutely.
And as well as thinking about other unexpected things, let's say like boomerang kids, you know, that you might have a child who moves back into the house or something
right.
after when you think that you're retired.
I have one of those. But she got a really good job near home. So
that's good.
We welcomed her in.
I've got that in a book that I had been working on myself called Get Out Early. And
okay.
So the idea is that we all want to get out early. And, you know, you can follow your passion. I don't care what it is or whether that you want to play golf or you're not going to be a professional and play in the PGA. But there are other kinds of ancillary activities that you know, like websites where that you can sell used equipment or,
right.
you know, whatever that will keep you around the activity that interests you the most.
Absolutely. You know, so. And I'm going to say, in summarizing all of that, you have to have a plan.
Tell me about it, brother.
I spent prior to January, even though I make it short, and there I am pulling the plug in January, now 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I began writing.
Okay.
And I wrote 3 books in 4 years. Getting to Us, which went bestseller, was released in June of this year. What's Your Freaking Point was released in September, and then before Christmas, the third book will be released. But I had many sleepless nights for 4 years writing the 3 books.
Did you start writing those each individually, or are you kind of got into the other books, like, wait a minute, I'll save that for another book, and working on them simultaneous, or what was your creative
part? Actually, it's an interesting process.
Yeah.
I don't know how much time... Getting to Us was the goal book. That was my keynote. That was the cornerstone of every message I wanted to deliver.
And as a speaker, you need to have a book to sell.
Yes.
Too.
Well, you need to have a book, but also, too, I needed a clean, concise message that was my own.
Yeah.
So I ended up working on that book. I actually hired a book writing coach to yell at me and tell me how stupid I was when I would write dumb things.
Okay. Interesting.
And she guided me through the process. Taught me a little bit about what readers look for, and then helped me rethink my positions and challenge me. So that was the real struggle book. That was an effort, and I worked hard on it. Getting to Us then was that book. What's Your Freaking Point? I collaterally, during the same time, rewrote Performance on Trial on my own for the corporate market.
Yeah.
And then the third book, which is coming out in... hopefully, we're hoping for a December date. I'm waiting for my artist now. But that is called Don't Be a Hamster, 30 Tips to Ignite the Imagination of Busy People. And what that is 30 rules to stay creative and focused. And that was written by me during the same 4 years for me as a guide to keep myself creative.
And focused.
And at the end of it, my publishing advisor looked at the notes and said, can we publish this? And I said, it was meant for me.
Yeah.
He said, no, we can make this meant for everybody. So I adjusted it, cleaned it up, and now the artist is doing the hamster artwork.
Right.
And getting the hamster wheel broken. And that'll be out by Christmas.
What are just 2 or 3 of the tips you can think of from that?
Number one.
Yeah.
Always hang around with creative people. Okay.
Fly with eagles, don't walk with turkeys.
No.
Yeah.
That's right. You want to stay with creative people because they're going to help you be more creative.
Right.
One of my other favorite tips is to always think in pictures. Don't just think about something. Pay attention to the details of what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about it, talk about the details of what you saw. Don't remember, for instance, sitting here talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going to remember sitting and talking to Scott Wells. I'm going to be remembering that I sat next to you, did this interview, and while we're doing it, the people at the next table are speaking in German, and there's a peacock on the lawn, and the whole visual becomes part of my forced
narrative.
Memory.
Right.
So I remember that, and by forcing myself to do that, you naturally become more creative and visual.
But that's one of the things I think you have to actually force yourself to do, and I say that because people are naturally one way or the other, and I'll say that because when you will explain something, someone will say, I hear what you're saying. That means they're an audible person.
Right.
Others will say, oh, I see what you mean.
Yes.
Meaning that they can visualize what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's one of those just little terms that a lot of times you'll overlook. And once you know how a person assimilates information, you can actually direct your the focus of what you're trying to tell them to how they will interpret that information. In other words, if they are visual people, they say, oh, I see what you're saying. You will talk about, like you said, I see this out in the lawn, I see the palm trees, and you know, the the Caribbean's right over there,
right.
And whatnot. So you start to create these mental images, and they can relate more to that as opposed to being more audible, I guess, and intellectual.
Well, but if you remember everything clearly, you can pull from that scene whatever you need in that dialogue.
Isn't that what they use for mnemonics?
I have a lousy memory.
Do you?
I have one of the worst memories in the world.
So you don't use mnemonics?
No, I okay. don't.
So you don't do mnemonica, I guess.
I have tried to memorize a deck for years.
Yeah, yeah.
I still use sidestep.
Okay. It works. Yeah.
No, my memory is not good, but the problem is, to me, memorizing deck, memorizing names, memorizing numbers, they're not visual enough for me.
Right.
But I can remember every place I've ever been and every person I met, and that I'm okay with.
Do you remember names or faces better?
It depends. Mostly, I will remember names.
I mean, at names.
People laugh at me when I can remember every grade school teacher I ever had,
sure.
and I can describe them for you and tell you about them.
Right.
It's because that's just the way I've always been, because people
been
are
wired.
Very important to me.
Right. Well, I have learned, and it was just a skill, was something just innate with me, where I will call people by name once that I meet them, particularly if you're doing a cocktail, walk around, strolling kind of a thing, of introducing yourself and you ask their names. And as I would leave the party, then I would say, you know, thank Joe, thank you, Deb, so, you know, appreciate that. And they'll look at me and said, how's that guy remember our name? I mean, that's what's more important, that I have interacted with them, and going full circle to what you were talking about, of actually listening to your audience and remembering their name, and that becomes more important than, you know, they signed a card and I found it.
And I'll give you my defense. I can't do that. Okay. I won't remember their names, but what I will remember is, on the way out, instead of looking at someone saying, hey, Scott, it was great sitting here with you.
Yeah.
It'll be, hey, Scott, hope you have a safe trip back to Houston. Or, hey, have a safe trip back to Houston.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I hope your dog is okay. Because
the
I'll
details.
Remember details about the person that I can visualize.
Right.
And that's what I recall, not the name.
That's interesting.
So, and I jokingly say, Scott, that I'm in the corporate market, because most of my events, thank God they're wearing name tags.
That's true. And sometimes I think it's kind of funny. They forget and they walk out of the room or whatever. And I've capitalized. I'm sure you have capitalized on that as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And you'll call them by names. How do you know my name? Well, I'm the mind shark.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes. Because your name tag's around your neck still. You forgot to take it off.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, golly,
yeah.
Yeah. No. They'll walk into 7-Eleven or something, you know, or the convenience store. Yeah.
And
that is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So the mind shark moniker that you use. Tell me how you came up with that, and exactly
I what, did not.
Oh.
Actually, I'll give credit where credit is due. In a telephone conversation with Bruce Bernstein.
Oh, really? Okay.
I told Bruce I was looking
to... Is he in Chicago or
yes,
New York?
Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
I told Bruce I was looking to rebrand myself.
Okay.
And he said, why? You have a perfect brand now. And I said, no, I don't. He said, oh, you do. I just haven't told you what it is. And he said, you are half mind reader, half lawyer. You're the mind shark. And I just started laughing. And as a good lawyer would do, I then went out and had it trademarked and copyrighted and everything else. So,
right.
You know, I've only ever had to sue one person, but yes.
Really? For infringement?
Yeah, yeah.
It was going to be using the same kind of a
name. Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. Well, that probably happens more often than you would imagine.
Yeah.
With other people thinking, well, I like that idea, you know, like an infotainer or
something.
You know. I don't know, was that Joel Bauer or somebody, I think, who may have coined that first, but I would think that everybody, a lot of people in the trade show business.
You know, and sometimes there are certain ones out there that just become commonplace, like everybody knows edutainer.
Correct.
Edutainer, everybody knows. Well, the original edutainer and the person that originally had a trademark on it was Herb True, who was a professor at...
I don't know who that is.
Notre Dame.
Herb
and,
True.
And I'm not Notre Dame. One of the Illinois colleges. Yeah. Okay. One of those colleges. I can't remember which one. I'm sorry.
Okay,
Indiana
U of I
College.
Or...
Yeah.
Okay,
but
Purdue.
Herb True was a professional speaker who started using edutainer back in the 70s.
And he was a magician as well?
No, he was just a speaker.
Oh, I see.
And he was a comedy guy. And I actually talked to him one day about it and said, everybody uses that now. And he said, yeah, I know. It went out of control.
There's nothing you can do about
but
it.
But it became a commonplace term. And he didn't care. You know, because he was getting up there in years and didn't care.
That's kind of like some of these things. Well, like, you know, show me your hand. No, your clean hand. Oh, that was your clean hand.
Yes.
Kind of a thing. I talked to Walter Blaney. Walter said, well, that was his idea. You know, that was his line.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I mean, a lot of times you don't know where these things come from. Because I remember that Bill Palmer has a line, that Al Goshman used to have a line which he'd say, I'm a magician, I'm going to magish for you. And everybody knew that was an Al Goshman line. Then Bill Palmer had added to it, instead of saying that, saying, I'm a wizard and I'm going to whiz for you.
Yes.
Yeah. And so people have used that line. And on his website, he has a list of people's names who are authorized to use that line. And he says, all you have to do is ask me. You know, I'm not charging for it. He says, I just want to be recognized for it, and I will put your name gladly on the list to let you use that line if you, if it's not legal. But I mean, it's just something just ethically that
right.
if you want to feel as if that you're using it, just write to Bill, and he'll put your name on and you know, add you to the list and
yeah.
everything, you know. But after you say, I'm a magician, I'm going to magish for you. Just be glad I'm not a wizard. So he doesn't say, I'm going to whiz
right,
for you.
Right,
yeah, so it finished. That's the line.
Yes,
sorry.
That's
so that's
right,
the
yes.
one that Bill uses. Bill, because he was the Merlin the Wizard for a long number of years at the Renaissance Festival. Anyhow, yeah, I think you need to develop your own character and your own personality and everything. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a friend of mine in Los Angeles who's a comedy writer, and I actually sent him a copy of my show over a year ago, and he gave me the history of every line I was using.
Oh, really?
And where it came from.
Yeah.
And then we pulled the ones of all the ones that we believed weren't in public domain
mm-hmm.
and rewrote everything so that it would be new again.
Yeah.
But it was, it's just like magicians, we have those people. Yeah, this is my it's a comedy guy who does
yeah.
that. It's awesome.
That's great.
You know, because one of my lines he looked at, and it was just funny, he looked at me and said, oh, my God, that was so-and-so, 1957, Catskills. And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, that's when that line started. Okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, how cool is that?
My friend Jamie Salinas had used a line, and it was, I think, put on YouTube. And he got an email from someone who had said, hey, that's my line. And he didn't know this guy from Adam, you know, and he
right.
just thought some guy was claiming it was his line. And he said, I'll tell you what, why don't you, he wrote back to him and said, why don't you send me a list of all your lines and I'll tell you which ones, you know, that I'm using or not, you know, and kind of being snarky a little bit about it. And then, long story short, it was the right guy, the guy who did really invent the line.
Oh,
you
that's
know?
Funny.
He apparently was a lot well-known, more well-known than Jamie thought that he
yeah.
was.
Yep.
It's like, oh, you're really the guy. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we start to wrap up here in this beautiful location, a nice cool breeze coming through then right now. Let me ask you, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So what is your magic word or phrase, or what is it that you live by? Good one, huh?
Oh, edit out the delay here. Let me think for a moment.
Yeah, something, it could be a philosophy. It's what you wake up every morning, you know, that kind of keeps you going and keep you charged.
My magic word is simply knowing.
Mm-hmm.
That I have lived the life I wanted to live, and I intend to live the life I plan to live.
Okay.
And that drives me forward every day, knowing that no matter what life throws at me, I'm in control.
Because you know where you're going.
I know where I'm going.
You're in control of your own destiny.
Absolutely.
That sounds great. Well, Joe, thanks very much.
Thank you, Scott.
For your friendship and your words.
Anytime.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Joe Crisillo. This is Scotty out.
Thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate your words. I thought also a lot of things you had to say. We went to a lot of different places into a lot of different areas, and so I enjoyed exploring all those little rabbit holes we went down. So thank you for your time and also your indulgence in following me as I led you astray a few ways. And it was not just interesting and entertaining, but educational. I think I got a lot out of that, too. So thank you again, Joe, and thank you, listeners, again for tuning in and listening. We are beginning the new year fresh without a sponsor. And we are depending upon you, who are the patrons, to help with your donations and your pledges in order to keep this podcast going throughout this new year and on into the future. We are reaching our 500th episode, and I plan to just kind of blow through that and continue going until who knows when. And it is with your help and cooperation and your financial pledges that help keep this going so we can pay for all of our domain charges and software and hardware, let alone our production costs, as well as attending conventions and everything else that we get. So anyhow, you guys are the ones who are a real backbone that encourage me to keep going. There are a few things that you can do if you can't pledge any financial sponsorship or patronage. Then if you could go to the iTunes store or if you go into Google Play or wherever, if you could just give us a 5-star rating along with some sort of a comment as to what you enjoy about the podcast, I would certainly appreciate it. Those kinds of comments that we get, of course, help to raise our standings within the iTunes store. So we actually continue to grow and think right now that we are like number 267, the highest of the podcast within the arts / performing arts in the United States. And there are other countries where we are much higher. Like in Japan, I think we're like number 67 in the arts / performing arts on iTunes. So thank you guys. Thank you for listening and for helping keep us up there. But it also helps whenever I get those kinds of positive comments that are posted in the iTunes store. So I would appreciate if you could go and do that. It would be fantastic. Also, if you can't help us financially as far as with a donation or with a pledge, one thing that would be helpful certainly is if you would just go to Amazon.com through the banner we have at the bottom of each of our pages on our website at themagicwordpodcast.com. At the bottom of each of those pages, there is a banner. Just click on that. It will take you to Amazon. There you can purchase whatever you normally would in Amazon, just as you normally would. It's just that through their affiliate program, they help to sponsor our program then as well, so we get a few pennies back. And so it was very helpful during this past Christmas season. There were several of you who had helped with the cause, and we got a few bucks back, and so that's very helpful. And so if you'll continue to do that throughout the rest of the year, if you just happen to think whenever that you're going to be buying something on Amazon, what is it I'm supposed to do? Oh yeah, go to themagicwordpodcast.com, click on that banner, and that will help Scotty. So I thank you guys, each and every one of you, for your help and your support in that regard, certainly. So beyond that, I think, again, you know, next week we're going to be having something. I know what I was going to tell you, and that is about the newsletter. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter, please do. We don't have but about 300 or so people who are now subscribing to the newsletter, and it's a free newsletter, and it doesn't take much of your time. In fact, it's very inobtrusive. It only comes out once a week, and with that, it basically just says, here's who we're going to be talking to this week, and a link to it, so this way that you could decide, this sounds interesting or not. You might want to listen to it straight away, or may want to archive that until later, and then also giving you some suggestions from the archives of perhaps some of those podcasts you may have missed, and I think we're some of the more outstanding ones that are worth a second listen, or at least a first listen if you haven't heard it the first time, because I know we have a lot of new listeners that continue to be added around the world on a daily basis. So thank you guys very much. And if you go to that newsletter, also the last thing it concludes with is telling you just a sentence or two about who's going to be coming up next week. For an example, next week we'll be featuring Chad Long, who was the last of the people that I had spoken to while I was in Magic Cuban. So we'll be having him come up. And so I mentioned that in the newsletter. So if you subscribe to the newsletter, you know all that kind of good information before it actually comes out, and you'll be the first ones to know. And be sure and like our Facebook page, and that is over at The Magic Word Podcast. Just kind of go to Facebook if you are into the social media kind of thing. And of course, Instagram would also be Scott Wells Magic. One thing I'd like to mention also before we close out 2018 completely, and that is to stop for a few moments to think about those people who have passed on during 2018 into the Magician's Valhalla, I called it. In fact, if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com or in this week's newsletter, I have listed many dozens of names of those who have passed, which include magicians and assistants and spouses that are personal, who are friends of mine, some of whom we have spoken to here on The Magic Word. And if you go to the website, you can read all those names, and it's kind of amazing to kind of think back that this was quite a year, all the way from earlier this year, where we had had the likes, obviously, of people like Lehman Parker and Harry Anderson, all the way until this past week with the passing of Pete Biro. So it's been a particularly difficult year, and also then obviously for me with my wife passing during 2018 then as well. So we had a lot of great people who have passed on who are no longer with us and deserve certainly another listen. So if you go to the podcast website, that you could see all of their names, and for those who I did talk with, they're highlighted. You can click on those and it'll take you to the website to listen to those episodes. episodes. So just take a few moments and pause to reflect the times and friendship that you've had with many of these people. And if you've never had an opportunity to meet them, at least for the contributions that they have made to our society, to our community, and to our personal lives. Well, this has been another pretty full episode, and I'm going to leave you there to think about that and to listen and to digest all the information that we've heard. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that whatever life throws at you, you are in control of your own destiny. This is Scotty out.